Welcome back. This is Daily Buddhism, audio show number 38. My name is Brian Shell, and I'm your host for the show. You can find the text, as well as all links mentioned in this program, and all past episodes, on the website at www.dailybuddhism.com. Send in your questions, comments, and suggestions to dailybuddhism@gmail.com. And as usual, I have a couple very brief announcements. And although I have had a few submissions now from people who want to write guest posts for the Daily Buddhism, I'd like to see more. I'd like to have one guest poster to cover some topic once each week, something like what Darren Littlejohn did last week, or what you're going to hear that Laurie Deschaine did this week. You don't need any special credentials or have written a book. All you need is an interesting viewpoint or story that illustrates some point. If you would be interested in writing a guest post for the show, send me an email with your topic idea. And then on Thursday night, I upgraded the software on the Daily Buddhism website, and the podcast was broken for a few hours. I apologize for any inconvenience, but it's back up and better than ever now, so if you're trying to download Thursday night, try again, it's good. And now, on with this week's show. And first off, we have this week's guest post. As with last week, we have another guest writer. This time we have Laurie Deschaine, who tells us how she applies Buddhist ideals to her everyday life. Again, if you'd like to do a guest article, drop me a note at brian@dailybuddhism.com with your topic idea, and I'll get back with you with a few easy requirements. But this week's article is called Kindness in Daily Living by Laurie Deschaine. At my big, fat Italian Christmas gathering, two family members got into a fight that ended with screams and tears. Though it doesn't happen often nowadays, I grew up around similar chaos. Oftentimes I drowned it out, but sometimes I fueled it, and other times I caused it. Then I discovered a few Buddhist principles that changed the way I acted and reacted. I learned to offer compassion instead of judgment, to diffuse hostility with understanding and kindness. When I saw how profoundly that affected my state of mind, and everyone around me, I decided to practice and get better at it. That, I believe, is the core of Buddhism. Clearing your mind of fears, selfishness, and anger so that love can work its magic. And it truly does take practice. It starts with meditation or yoga. They're like mental maintenance. You stop your persistent internal monologue and find a sense of stillness. From that place of just being, instead of seeking the world around you with a critical eye, you can respond to people with loving kindness, also known as love without attachment. That's selfless love, and its effects are addictive. So, how do you practice in daily life? I take it off the yoga mat in 4 steps. First, commit to at least 3 random acts of kindness every day. Maybe it's something simple, like telling someone they're great at their job. Or perhaps it requires more effort, like helping an elderly woman with bags. Of course, there's no limit. Kindness is like a fire. The more you stoke it, the brighter it burns. 2. Work toward kinder thinking. An example. A friend snaps at you for something that's not your fault. You're human. At first you might feel annoyed and think she's being unfair and irrational. Choose a more compassionate thought, like, she's feeling defensive, and that must be painful. What can I do to help? Kindness in thinking leads to kindness in action. 3. Ruminate on the kind deeds and thoughts of people greater than yourself. Martin Luther King, the Dalai Lama, Mother Teresa. These leaders inspired millions with their strength, humility, and kindness. We all carry the exact same potential to change lives by being better, stronger, and kinder every day. Even if you inspire just one person, you've tapped into your personal power. And 4. Remember, kindness is contagious and addictive. Many times, when you act with kindness, it comes back to you. When it doesn't, you'll still feel blessed. positive intentions, and their ripple effect on your self-esteem and state of mind are greater than any validation you could get from someone else. And a quote, "My religion is very simple. My religion is kindness." And that was the Dalai Lama. Okay, that was from Lori Deschaine, who lives in the San Francisco Bay Area and writes for Discovery Girls magazine. You can also follow her inspirations by the user account BeMeaningful on Twitter. And as usual, there are links to both places in the show notes for this episode.
Hi, Brian. This is Kate. I'm from Pennsylvania, and I just discovered your podcast, and I'm finding it very, very interesting. And I was possibly wondering if you could cover the subject of chanting, because I've heard lots of different things from many different sects of Buddhism, and I just want to find out all I can. So, thanks.
And Kate from Pennsylvania has won 1 free month of the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. Give me a call or an email, Kate, and I'll get you set up right away. So my answer to the question. Well, you're right. Buddhism does have a lot of chanting. But that's not really exclusive. If you think about it, just about all religions do chanting in one form or another. If you listen to Muslim or Christian services, you'll often hear chanting. Whether it's the Lord's Prayer, or the Adhan, the Islamic call to prayer, chanting and religion go hand in hand. And yes, Buddhists do it too. But why? Well, the majority of Buddhist chants are not prayers, since asking a god for intervention is not really the way of Buddhism. While we have seen in the past that prayer does exist in Buddhism, it's not really related to chanting. Instead, most chanting is done as recitation of sutras, which are written works attributed to the Buddha, either to help teach the sutra or to simply keep it in mind via repetition. Examples would be chanting the Bodhisattva vows, or the Three Refuges, or the Five Precepts, the Loving Kindness Sutra, the Heart or Diamond Sutras, or the very famous Nianfo of Pure Land, Namu Amida Butsu. Sometimes, koans or poetry are chanted. But generally speaking, the purpose is to set one's mind in a particular place for a specific ritual or meditation. And in the show notes for this episode, I have links to 3 different YouTube videos that you can look at and listen to containing chanting. One, Om Mani Padme Hum, one about Zen chanting, and one called the Heart Sutra. Also, a Twitter reader submitted a website where you can download several different types of chants. There's a link to that in the show notes as well. And I'm going to play one of those right now. It's only around 2 minutes, so stick around. There's more of the show afterwards. And here we go.
Isodharani
Om Gaga Kavi Sammai Sovaka 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 Om Gaga Kavi Sammai Sovaka
Sammai Sovaka Om Kaka
And that was the file Jizo Shingon MP3 from www.zendust.org/chantsmp3.htm. Download it there or follow along at the show notes. And next up, we have a book review. This time it's called Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, Kadromas, and the Way of the Pilgrim, a transformative book of photography and pithy sayings by Simhananda. Published by Orange Palm Publications, 2007, has 205 pages, and as always, there is a link to order it from Amazon on the show notes. This one is a large coffee table style art book that is in a consistent format throughout. On the right-hand page is a full-page photo of some Buddha, Bodhisattva, or Kadroma. On the left-hand side of the page are two or three pithy sayings written in English, French, and Italian. There are also two or three smaller photos on the left-hand page, usually of different views of the same subject from the right-hand page. Although there are a few photos of humans and a handful of paintings, the vast majority of photos are of statues, idols, and sculptures. The Good. The book has a high-quality hardcover, and the pages are made of sturdy, glossy paper that really shows the desire to make this a long-lasting and durable keepsake. The images, especially the full-page ones, are astounding. Extremely colorful and sharp, most of these just exude history and reverence. Some of the art looks well-maintained and new, while many are flaking paint or otherwise showing their age. Some are so old that the faces and features are long gone. Remember, Buddhism is up to 2,500 years old, and there's some real history shown here. So whether the images are Buddha, a Bodhisattva, a mythical demon, or a painting of some legendary figure, you know that each image has a wondrous story to tell. Unfortunately, that story isn't told. The so-called pithy sayings, while wise in themselves, have very little to do with the images. Do you really like the images on the page you're looking at? Well, good luck identifying it, because there's no list of sources, no explanation, no titles, not even a name or a location for any of the images. They sure are pretty pictures, but there's no way to identify any of them. What the publishers were thinking when they decided to leave everything unidentified, I have no idea. The only reason I can imagine for this lack is that due to the triple language translations of everything, it might have complicated things a little bit. Now, I definitely admit that I am not a student of Eastern art, but there were very few images here that I recognized. These are not the same old photos of Buddha that you've seen elsewhere, which makes the lack of labeling even more galling. If you enjoy sculpture or photography, I want to see some really beautiful photos of ancient art that you very possibly have not seen before, then give this one a look. The photos really are outstanding. My bottom line on this, 3 stars out of 5. It's beautiful, but essentially useless as a reference. And now, the koan that everyone has been waiting for months on end. Everyone knows this one, but there's actually quite a bit more to it than the punchline that we all know. Here goes. The master of Kenin Temple was Mokurai, the Silent Thunder. He had a little protege named Toyo, who was only 12 years old. Toyo saw the older disciples visit the master's room each morning and evening to receive instructions in Sanzen, or personal guidance in which they were given koans to stop their mind wandering. Toyo wished to do Sanzen also. "Wait a while," said Mokurai. "You're too young." But the child insisted, so the teacher finally consented. In the evening, little Toyo went at the proper time to the threshold of Mokurai's Sanzen room. He struck the gong to announce his presence, bowed respectfully 3 times outside the door, and went to sit before the master in respectful silence. "You can hear the sound of 2 hands when they clap together," said Mokurai. "Now show me the sound of 1 hand. Toyo bowed and went to his room to consider the problem. From his window he could hear the music of the geishas. "Ah, I have it," he proclaimed. The next evening, when his teacher asked him to illustrate the sound of 1 hand, Toyo began to play the music of the geishas. "No, no," said Mokurai, "that will never do. That is not the sound of 1 hand. You've not got it at all." Thinking that such music might interrupt, Toyo moved his abode to a quiet place. He meditated again. What can the sound of 1 hand be? He happened to hear some water dripping. "Ah, I have it," imagined Toyo. When he next appeared before his teacher, Toyo imitated dripping water. "What is that?" asked Mokurai. "That is the sound of dripping water, but not the sound of 1 hand. Try again." In vain, Toyo meditated to hear the sound of 1 hand. He heard the sighing of the wind, but the sound was rejected. He heard the cry of an owl. This also was refused. The sound of 1 hand was not the locusts. For more than 10 times, Toyo visited Mokurai with different sounds. All were wrong. For almost a year, he pondered what the sound of 1 hand might be. At last, little Toyo entered true meditation and transcended all sounds. "I could collect no more," he explained later. "So I reached the soundless sound." Toyo had realized the sound of 1 hand. And then Thursday was New Year's Day. So, Happy New Year! I wanted to make a special post to wish all of you a Happy New Year. Thanks for your readership and listenership in 2008. I've really enjoyed continuing to develop the Daily Buddhism, and have appreciated your continued support and involvement in the growing online Buddhist community. Now, as we move into 2009, I thought it would be fun to look back quickly on the past year with a top 10 list of my favorite posts published here. So here are my own favorites from the past year, in no particular order. Some of the posts meant something to me personally. Some taught me something. Some were just fun to write. Many of them had really great reader comments, so if you do follow along and follow these links to look back and reread these posts on the blog, be sure to scroll down to the reader comments sections and feel free to add to the comments if you have any new thoughts to add to these. Again, no particular order. Zen in the Dark. I liked this one when the power went out for 3 days. I like the post where I actually learned something about myself. I'm not going to read all the links, they're in the show notes. Second one would be Meditation on a Whoopee Cushion. It's another personal experience just from last week. It's the newest post that I'm going to list here. Black and White or Gray. A reader makes a great point about my being a little bit too specific on some points. Not everything is black and white. There's a whole lot of gray on the middle path. And the post called Buddhist Pet Food was one of my favorites, where a reader says they're making a dumb question, in their words, but it revealed a very complex question and situation. The Pesky Fifth Precept was another post about the fifth precept, about intoxication. Is it really debatable, or is it only justification? A lot of good comments on that one. And then there's a pair of posts on war, called War and War Follow-Up. These were good posts, okay, that I wrote, but I especially liked the reader comments on these. It was one of the first posts we got that really got a lot of response, and they had some good answers there. Check that one out. Number 7 on the top 10 list was one on homosexuality. Someone asked this question, and I had it all wrong until I did the research, so here you can find out where my opinion did not match everyone else's. But I learned different. Number 8, Christian bashing. It's so easy to do sometimes. We all slip. But ours is not the only way. Then one of the more fun posts, the Fat Buddha, Skinny Buddha, and Laughing Buddha. I get a lot of email about this question from people who didn't know why Buddha is always shown as fat. So I had to answer that one, and it was one of the more fun posts to write. And lastly is vegetarianism. There's several posts on the site about that, but it's a favorite topic among new Buddhists, so it's one of mine, too. I have to cover the more common questions, and that one seems to come up a lot. A couple of the posts listed are Buddhist vegetarians, and also to meet or not to meet, although the question is also covered in the Buddhist dog food that I mentioned a minute ago. So, there's my list for the year. How about you? Have any of the articles posted here made a difference for you? Was there something you learned that otherwise you had completely backwards? Was there something that struck you in just the right way? Was there something I said that you thought was completely wrong? Put your comments on the blog or send it to me in email. I'd love to hear from you. And do remember, it's your involvement that keeps the Daily Buddhism site moving forward. Your questions and comments are very much appreciated, as is your continued readership. Thanks for a great year. And that's all I have for you this week. If you want to ask a question on any Buddhism-related topic, send in your question by email to dailybuddhism@gmail.com or phone them in at the voicemail hotline, 937-660-4949. Or post them in the comment section of any individual blog post. The Daily Buddhism runs primarily from your donations, and it's easy to help out. Just go to www.dailybuddhism.com/donate and click on one of the options there. You can donate as little as $1. If you choose to send in either $5 a month or make a one-time donation of $50 or more, you'll get a free subscription to the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. And keep in mind that the Daily Buddhism daily email newsletter is completely free. All you need to do is go to www.dailybuddhism.com/sign, S-I-G-N, and sign up. So, see you next week.